Atlantic Threads. Atlantic Threads is an initiative led by Pivot in partnership with African Artists Foundation, Dig Where You Stand, and Cité Internationale des Arts in Paris. This project, Prologue, was supported by the Embassy of France in Brazil and the Institut Français in the framework of the Brazil-France season 2025. The artists were welcomed in Paris as part of the Institut Français and Cité Internationale des Arts residency program. Conversation 1. Gabriela de Matos and Ulufemi Hinson-Yovu. Gabriela de Matos is a Brazilian architect and urban planner, co-curator of the Brazil Pavilion at the 18th Venice Architecture Biennial in 2023, and winner of the Golden Lion for Best National Representation. She graduated in architecture and urbanism from PUC Minas and specialized in sustainability and management of the built environment. Gabriela holds a master's degree in humanities and rights from USP. She served as co-president of the Institute of Architects of Brazil in São Paulo and is a professor at the Institut Escola de Cidade. Her research focuses on Afro-Brazilian architecture, and she founded the project Arquitetas Negras, which maps the work of black female architects in Brazil. Ulufemi Hinson-Yovu is an architect, designer, researcher and curator based in Cotonou, Benin. She is the founder of SAR Studio, a polymath research-based practice in Cotonou, developing projects from various scales and materiality, celebrating the local context with a focus on decolonizing architecture. Her process flows around design and research on biodiversity in the city, heritage, informality, and habitat in Cotonou and West Africa. She participated in the 14th and the 18th Venice Biennial, exhibited at African Mobilities in Architecture Museum, Munich, and is the laureate of the Prince Claus Building Beyond 2023 Prize. She is the co-author of Building African Future, 2023. Over the last 10 years, she has developed a keen interest in West African architecture, spanning from vernacular to postmodern, through her various travels in the continent, culminating in her appointment as curator for the first West African architecture exhibition at the Dakar Biennial 2024 OFF, entitled Architecture of West Africa: Yesterday's Heritage, Tomorrow's Cities. She is a member of the Beninese Board of Architects and a tutor at Africa Design School in Cotonou. This conversation traverses the respective experiences and practices of two black women architects in different contexts. It evokes African and Afro-descendant architectural heritages, highlighting the importance of the body and informal practices of urban space in defining new approaches and ways of thinking, building and sharing the city. This dialogue is moderated by Olivier Mabrouk, author, curator and cultural theorist.
Bonsoir. So, good evening. So the conversation this evening will be in English. I hope that everybody is comfortable with it. So I'm happy to host the two first guests of the podcast of the program Atlantic Threads, which is a program hosted by Cité Internationale des Arts, and which is dealing with a conversation in between Brazil, West Africa, and here in Paris. So there is a kind of triangle talking about Atlantic's questions, but indeed also talking about practices of artists and architects. And today is my pleasure to host two architects, indeed, two black female architects. It's a very an honor for me to host Gabriela de Matos, which is from Brazil, from São Paulo, and Olifemi Ransonyovo, which is from Cotonou, Benin.
Yeah.
And so it will be indeed a conversation to allow Gabriela and Olifemi to introduce their own practices, the way they enter in the practice of architecture, talking about some specificity of what they are working on and the research they are doing. And the last part of the conversation will be also a conversation that will be more on the crossroad in between your two practices to imagine first steps of, let's say, future practices, because it's this encounter and the program here at Cité Internationale des Arts is indeed the first step of a long-term program. So we don't really know exactly what will be the future, but it will, all the things will happen. And just to tell you that next week it will be also two other conversations will happen as part of the same program at the same place at 6 p.m. So, yeah, the first things, and so during we'll have a conversation during about 1 hour with Gabriela and Olofemi, and we will keep at half an hour at the end just for your question and remarks in relation with that conversation, if okay for you. And so, yeah, my first question is about, for YouTube, we're going to start with Gabriela, and after Olifemi will also say something about that, and we can also cross in the conversation. And the first step is just ask you to introduce yourself. It's always a difficult exercise. So just to, for me, what was very interesting in the practice, your practice in architecture, is that in the common sense related to architecture, we always think about human building infrastructure, reflecting about architecture from catalog with beautiful buildings. But indeed, a part of your practice is also research-based. And I would like also, firstly, you talk both about that aspect in your work as an architect, with not only focus on building, but also on researching and what research could mean for an architect. And of course, there is a second point in that, is that talking about your own trajectory, I would like you to talk about some very particular steps or moments, and I say good or bad experiences, that open you to the kind of architecture you try to do now. Because trying to tell your story from that perspective, from the question of research and the question of the kind of things you want to do now, from the first experiences you had with the architecture as a black female architect in Brazil and in Benin.
Okay, thank you. Good evening. Do we have time to do this? Because
I know that as soon as we decide to host African speaker and Brazilian speaker, we may have time.
Okay.
Otherwise, there's no way. So you have time.
Yes, okay. So I'm Gabriela. I'm architect, professor, and also curator in Brazil. I'm from Minas Gerais state, but I live in São Paulo. And my trajectory in architecture, it's very, how can I say? I begin my career questioning the fact that I didn't have any colleagues, black colleagues in the university, or also professors. And all that we know about architecture in Brazil is the architecture made by white men. So this is the beginning of my question when I ended my graduation. So I was questioning about this, but in the other hand, I was part of some movements with black communities in Brazil related to music and other kinds of cultural manifestation. And but I thought, okay, but maybe, I don't know why, maybe black people in Brazil are not interested in architecture. But I realized pretty quick that it's not that black people in Brazil is not interested in architecture. It's that our view or our idea of what it is architecture in Brazil is just what we know about Oscar Niemeyer or Lina Bobardi, all this canon that we have in Brazil. And the Afro-Brazilian architecture, it was not recognized like this. So I started to investigate more and more about this. Then I created a project called Black Female Architects in 2018. And I started to map what they are doing, because it's very important to say that Brazil has a majority of black people, and we are like 200 million people in the country. So it's like confusing why we don't comprehend this architecture as architecture. So I started to map these black female architects, and of course we are a huge network now with 800 architects, and we start to investigate more and more about these layers that are like involved in the way we work, the kind of opportunities we have, and also what type of architecture can we do or not.
Can you relate that movement of creating that network of black architects with the progressive development of black scholar also in the university in general? Is there for you a problem really relate to architecture by itself, or is also the lack of black people in university in general?
Both. We have this lack of black people in university until the, I think, 90s. And then 10 years after, with President Lula, he started to create some affirmative ways so people could, so we have more black people in university. But is still this perspective of what it is architecture is still there. So this theme, Afro-Brazilian architecture, is not like recognized in the University of Architecture. We are like a few group of research architects that are investigating more and more about the subject, and also like creating this affirmation of an Afro-Brazilian architecture. But we have both. But I start to like to look to other experiences that we have in black communities in Brazil, like Terreiros de Candomblé, and also all the Blocos Afro in Salvador, how these people were gathering and created this a live archive of themselves in different parts of the society. So I start to understand that we have to create this group so we can investigate more and more about our expressions, our heritage, and then we are going to create a kind of architecture that is related to our history.
And as you said, the starting point is that there is there are already a lot of black practice of so-called architecture, but for you the problem is that the national representation which is really a political decision,
yes.
National representation of the so-called Brazilian architectural traditions,
yeah.
have been really point as that and not that.
Yes.
So there is really that form of decision that have been made, yes. Clearly.
Yes, and it was in the 50s.
Yeah, representing, you said, Brazilian modernity in a way.
Yes, yes, yes. Modernism were like an expression at that moment to, okay, how we can share our architecture to the world. And so modernism were like choose to be this expression. Mm. But it's just a little part of Brazilian architecture. So we can't like define Brazilian architecture as just talking about modernism. Because also modernism in Brazil, it's another expression to colonialism.
Hmm. And so I think it's a good transition with you, Olifemi, and I would like you firstly try to trace, as Gabriela did briefly, your own path through architecture. Are you entering it with what kind of question, and what are also your question now? And slowly go to another part of the question that Gabriela already opened about the question of was indeed is modernism in the West African context, and what is also tradition? Because as Gabriela said, tradition is something that has still to be investigated. And tradition is not only separate in the West African context to modernism. It's a quite different situation that you say modernism in the Brazilian context is made really a political decision of saying this is that and not that. And I do think that things in the West African context are more mixed, no?
It's actually quite similar. So, hello everyone. So, I am Olufemi Rinson-Yovo. I'm an architect, researcher, and curator. And my starting point with architecture was actually quite naive. It was growing up in West Africa, in Benin, in Cotonou. My question was simply, when I was studying architecture, I was taught about European architecture because I studied in the UK and in France, because we only have one school of architecture in West Africa, which is in Togo, and the curriculum is quite dated, so I studied where I did. And then my innocent question was, okay, looking at my city and where I grew up, what is actually Beninese or West African architecture, what is its contemporary definition? And one of the main factors was that we often realize that architecture back home is not adapted to the local needs, is not adapted to the climate, not really adapted to the society or how the people use the space. For example, we are in a tropical setting where we often live outside. We share a lot of space outside, and then we build a small pigeonhole where everybody's trying to escape from. So that was my innocent question. What is West African architecture or Benin architecture or West African architecture? I didn't even know. And also one of the other statements was that if you go from like either when you go to like Togo or Nigeria, not Nigeria, probably Togo, Ivory Coast or Benin, it's kind of like the really same similar architecture. Whereas when you are in Europe, there's like very different strong type of sense. Like for example, in have like Osmanian style in Paris, and you have like German architecture. In London, you have like Palladian, etc., etc. So that was my starting point in architecture. And then from then on, I had the graduating from that. I studied actually Cotonou in my master thesis, and that was just like the opportunity for me to start looking and understanding the city and understanding why it was the way it is and what was the result of that, and also understanding that my city was quite a young city, 100 and some years old, for example. So that was quite important to realize that such a young city had to catch up to urbanization of today's standard was quite interesting. And then if I wanted to, for example, modernism in our cities, I would rather talk about West Africa in general, not in particular just Cotonou. So we had lots of foreign architect from the 60s, from the independence. We have, for example, Drew and McFry in London, British architect who worked in Ghana and who worked in Nigeria and built the tropical modernism in Nigeria and in Ghana, for example. We had like people like Ducharme, Laraste, and Minost, which were French architects who built Abidjan and Dakar a lot. We had Henri Chaumette, for example, who built the presidential palace in Benin, for example, and he built a lot also in Dakar and in Abidjan. And I'm actually quite saddened to not having any Beninese name to say right now. Like in the 60s, I only have like French name to say, and it's actually quite sad for me to just have that. I knew that, but right now, just citing all of those names and not having anything in my language to cite is quite, So anyway, but coming back to the definition of modernism, what was quite interesting at that point was that they took West Africa as a laboratory, good or bad, but at least they worked with the climate then, and they worked accordingly to the elements. Whereas, and they also work a lot with shading devices, loggias, and things like that, which we have lost qualities in the contemporary and the last 20 years of architecture. I think I did a little bit of a tangent, but...
I think it's very interesting because I think, indeed, I was just trying to emphasize that, indeed, where in the Brazilian case, there is really a very strong political decision to point a manner of doing that is not totally related to the Afro-Brazilian life as a modernism. In that case, there is something that is a kind of hybrid situation, but it stands. But indeed, that modern gesture made by European was indeed using some African elements.
Absolutely.
And indeed create a form of archive of it.
Absolutely.
But what is missing in the archive, as we already talked before, is also what you call what the vernacular is, that are more informal practice of architecture that were not considered as being architecture. So there is a common point as that point, and we'll come back to Gabriela with that point too, is that finally they use some element of formal elements of idea of the of the way of creating some building, but they totally decide to blind any other practice of the spaces that are for you central to reflect about an African tradition.
Exactly. And what is quite interesting is that they researched some of that architecture and then took some of the some things that were quite, I would say, like a dilution of that architecture and then infuse that into the practice of modernism that they had. But at the same time, we also have to take into account that it's a lot oftentimes independent African government who called them to now design. And also in the 60s, architecture was extremely political because it was the gesture of, okay, we are modern, we are entering this new era, look at us, look how we are building, as we are building a great Manhattan, for example, in Le Plateau of Abidjan and Dakar, how we have a Manhattan now. So that was also a gesture. And now coming back to vernacular, there's like two things that I would love to say about vernacular in architecture in West Africa in general. One thing that is very strong that I realized, and that was coming from a recent experience that I had observing for the last 3 years West African cities and architecture and curating an exhibition about West African architecture in Dakar last year, was that our vernacular architecture is literally, no matter how where you go, is literally five principal elements. It's the material, earth, oftentimes, is earth or fiber, patio, like always having opening to have light inside. So either with a patio or with like a patio with like maybe water, like Casa Impluvium in Senegal, for example, or would you see patios in like Benin or Nigeria, in like the Royal Kingdoms, etc. The other thing was always a lot, always shading, always not being on the facade, but always allowing the people to be shaded from the elements. And then the other other thing was biodiversity. Always work with the element. Always have some sort of little gardens, etc., around the house. And then finally, the sense of community building in different units that work together. And those things were things that were completely wiped out, but wiped out in the buildings of contemporary city. But one of the most important thing that the modernists taking in account, also borrowing from Le Corbusier, and the practice is the shading device and the claustra and the loggia that they took from the vernacular, and they also took from their practice, and they also took it from, like, I think Japanese architecture as well, to infuse that into modernism. And then the other thing is that today's architecture that you have in Cotonou or Abidjan from the 60s finally is sort of an hybridization of the vernacular and the modernist, but with more modernist take than any vernacular geometry, but organization of space. And then the second comment I wanted to put is that we also have lots of something they call informal economy, which we can also call, which I rather call popular economy and popular ways of living, which often stems from, a lack of planning of the modern city that remained in the urban setting and now are called informal because the city hasn't been planned with those use. So nowadays, so every time they build a new project, they won't look at the importance of the vernacular aesthetics, not even aesthetics, vernacular typologies, especially in organization. They won't take that in account in the planning of the current city. And after they finish the design, we will still remain with the same lack and the same need of the same need that hasn't been taken in account when they were designing. And that's something that is very much pregnant in either Abidjan, Dakar, and then you have like cities eviction currently right now because now they're trying to like evict people from the places because they haven't planned for them.
Yeah, we will talk a bit more just later about also the question of shops because I think the question of so-called, again, informal economy, and then we can call it popular economy. Popular way of using the space. But just as a transition, because I know that is very central also in your reflection, Gabriela, and you told me once that for you, reflecting about an Afro-Brazilian architecture have to be based on the practice of the space of Black people. So what they are doing, practically way of living, way of occupying the space, including the dangerosity of some spaces for Black people in Brazil, which could be quite specific in comparison with the African context, how Black people are not supposed to, where they're supposed to be or where they're not supposed to be. And so that question, there is a kind of double dynamic in between, we'll say, the popular and vernacular way of using the space, coming also for Quilombo traditions and so on, but on the other hand, also the dangerosity of the city for people of color.
We are very concerned, not everybody, of course, in Brazil, but this group of researchers, we are very concerned with this idea of informal architecture or informal ways to do architecture, because when we put like this, we are always reaffirming the position of who is able to do and kind of architecture that is formal. Also, the concept of a vernacular in Brazil is we are like questioning it. Because the meaning of it, it's something that we are observing in the past years, that it's like people are taking off the core of the vernacular idea and like trying to create things that are reproducing some kind of things. So that's why we have to put this Afro-Brazilian knowledge, Afro-Brazilian architecture, Afro-Brazilian culture, so people can't like stole the idea.
The question of extraction again.
Yes. So this is very important for us now. And I think we are like more interested in how how this huge community has been like creating different kinds of forms to live in the city and also not just survive, but also have a good life, actually, like the favelas. We have a lot of different layers of knowledges in favelas. But the common idea about the favelas is like the informal danger space to be. It's danger to be in the favela because the state wants to kill who lives in the favela, the black body. That's why it's danger to be there. Justice. You are not like facing. They have a whole plan, like to live there, to build, to protect the community, to do so. And also, the favela is like another moment of the quilombo, because the quilombo was the first experience of black people free in our country, in the moment of the slavery and everything. And these quilombos were like they used to occupy certain spaces in the city, and a lot of them they now are favelas. So it's another moment with a lot of people and facing another different kinds of problems. So I think the most important thing is to understand that. We have to take off, in the case of Brazil, we have to take off the idea that Afro-Brazilian community is not like able to produce knowledge because this is very racist, but it's very common for us like to understand black people just to labor or force and not having the capacity to create things and to create technologies and everything. So I think we are very much interested in how we have been doing this for ages. And so and understanding this and learning with this, how can we go to this future, right?
Is there also not a kind of challenge on the, let's say, epistemologic level?
Yes.
You talk about what is a technology, for instance.
Yes. This is the point for me. It's not about the building or the result of the whole process. For me, it's more important the process, the methodologies, the epistemologies, the practice during the process. And then we are going to have a result, which is just, for me, it's just a stop in a development, because we have to stop. But it's always ongoing kind of practices. And this is related to this idea also of what it is time. Because this community doesn't work, doesn't understand time like this past, present, and future.
Yeah, this is something that we will also keep on developing next week with Tigana, that also talk about the question of archive as a presence. Yes. And I do think that you talk about architecture as a form of presence.
Yes.
And not as a kind of permanent building, but as a form of permanent performance of being there.
Yes. And so. Yes. And this is also connected to your question, because if we think, okay, these first cities, colonial cities in Brazil, were not planned to have black people in that. Yes. And also Brasília, as another moment of colonialism in Brazil, also doesn't plan to have black people in there. So this community are always facing this struggle. And so how can we be in these cities? How can we exist in these cities? So that's why I am very interested in how people took this colonial space, cities, buildings, or anything, and transform with their presence.
Yeah, there is something that relates to that I would like also to question you too. Is also about the living, because we talk about, normally when you talk about architecture, we are not used to talk about living matter. We're not used to that, considering that it's more masterpiece, construction for centuries, legacy. But here we are several times trying to address the question of the living. That is, for me also, it's related to the question of climate. That is also a part of the question of architecture today. And as to sustainability, in the sense of the modern city is creating some separate spaces with separate functions, where I do think that the popular culture and popular black culture is trying to gather everything in the form of proximity, in between when I'm walking, when I'm cooking, when I'm living, where is the garden? The garden is not something totally separate from the... Can you talk about that way of, in a way, even the popular community in the city like Cotonou is tricking, in a way, the urban plan to recreate a kind of proximity of different activities of space of living for good life, I would say.
Yes, of course. So, always starting point, since I mentioned that Cotonou was Cotonou is a fait colonial, so it's a city created by the need of translating goods from the port of Cotonou. So basically had like a plan called Plan Calça, which was basically drawing the city with like an orthogonal grid in direction of the sea, so that we have like the best sea breeze, and then we had like and then they had a separation. All of the factories and the white spaces were facing the sea, and then there was there's oftentimes as even like in Dakar or even in Abidjan, there was voie ferrée, so a train line that was separating the autochthonous city from the colonial city. And it's the same in Abidjan. It was a bridge. In Dakar, is also a canal or a bridge or something. Can't remember, but there's always this gesture of separation. So in that regard, there was that city, planned city as the white city, and then there was the local city as it is. And then in that, you see the different typologies, because you see that new modernist architecture was built oftentimes for government buildings or for embassies or wealthy residents, was very modernist with a sense of like balconies, etc. And then at the same time, the autochthonous city with like quartier like Saint-Michel and places like that were actually where you had houses, often row house on the ground floor, just one level, but it often had like that pitch roof. But at the same time, it often had that sense of like a lower fence, for example, so you could tell like people could go in and out. It wasn't like, because in the other side it's like higher fence, for example. And then there's also that sense of more claustra, more openings, a little bit more of permeability in the city. And then at the same time, the way the city was planned wasn't planned for what I call the informal economy, because they didn't say, okay, let's maybe think people are going to, aside from markets, like fixed market, they didn't say, okay, let's maybe know that this space is going to be a marketplace. And then looking at vernacular architecture, we have this thing of ephemerality. You know now how we have like ephemera shop, boutique ephemera. Oh, this is like a vernacular thing, I'm telling you. Because basically the same space in the morning will be a market, in the evening will be the way where people talk, and at nighttime it will be maybe like something else. And or sometimes the same place would be either like for women at some point of the day or for men at the end of, and it's like it's a technology. So it's a social technology, and they know it, and it's intrinsic. It's like it's embedded knowledge. Your family just tell you you mirror whatever your family doing, and everybody knows that how it works. So when they plan the cities, they don't plan for those usage. They don't plan for, and yet today, who in this country doesn't buy maybe like a banane braisée in Abidjan on the side of the street, or in Cotonou buy credits, or buy maybe, I don't know, some fried plantain? Who doesn't do that? From the Zemidjan, who is the guy who conduct a taxi motorbike, to the minister, he will buy that. Like, I remember I was doing simple example. I was I was project manager in a firm, and then we were building for the number two or three of the country, and literally across his house there was a lady selling puff puff, which is like fried good in the afternoon, and I know that my boss used to order the staff to go and buy that puff puff, and she was the best one, and you would come like maybe for 30 minutes away to go and buy her ones and nobody else. And yet, if you see, that house is typical what I describe as a more autochthonous design house, and the house they're building right now is literally white, three stories, glasses, ceiling, etc., etc. And yet, so that's how you see. And then the lady, she just like take her pan and frying stuff and just like gets on the streets. And then at the end of the day, she just moved back her stuff in. So there's that kind of flexibility that we had in the city, that kind of like accommodating for the need. And even like when you are in traffic light, the quality that people have to just be at the right time in the right moment for you to shop maybe an umbrella when it's rainy season or something. It's like, this is marketing level like 101. Those guys are like literally there's a sense of being close to the client that is quite unique, and yet we dismiss it as popular economy, and that's about it. And then after that, once now you start developing the city in the more international, more standard Western centric ways, then you do a déguerpissement. You tell everybody just to leave those side of the cities, and then you build the tar road. And the people oftentimes don't come there anymore because they are scared that they're going to be arrested. So that's how we lose those intelligences, those technology. And just, you don't need to say to somebody what you do is wrong. You just need to come and take it away from them. And they just know that it's not permitted anymore. That's as simple as that. And then you erase that. And then the next generation won't do that again. And that's how we lose those intrinsic and, you know, embedded knowledge that we've been having from centuries. And
I think what you said both, it sounds for me like different storyline or storytellings. I would say that the states, as you say, at the moment of the independence, so-called independence, let's say, at the moment of the formation also of the state of Brazil, there was a kind of state storytelling of being modern, or doing some gesture that were mirroring indeed the Western architecture and the Western way of doing, and refusing your own traditions, the everyday traditions. And there is the older storytelling. This is also the popular storytelling. And so you talk about a series of observation. I would like just to move to you, Gabriela, to move from the, try to reflect with you from the observation to the participation. Is the practice of architecture that you are interested in include a dimension of participation, and how to create something that people are not only producing technologies that we can observe and perhaps commodify at some point, as you said, as a form of extraction, and how could we imagine, how perhaps you try, and with the group of architects you create, you try to also consider that architecture could be also a co-production.
Yes, of course, and yeah, this is a. I think that it's very important in this way to produce architecture. It's like you don't have one person sign the project, just one person. And it's like a project for Terreiro de Candomblé. It's an architecture that is created by the community, with everybody around the table. Also the non-human, because a Terreiro de Candomblé, it's a place that for Orisha, so you have also this presence. So for me, this is the thing, like how can you produce architecture related to community, related to nature, related to human being, non-human being, how this architecture is going to change. And yes, in my own practice, in my office, I try to do this, of course, with the group. We are always like changing things, and we have all the names of every person involved in the process. Me and a few group of architects, we created an institute now, the name is Cambaraf, to promote Afro-Brazilian architecture. And the idea is we have to create opportunity for black architects, male and female, so they can imagine how this architecture could be and not depend on the relation with clients and everything. So our idea is to offer money to this group of this new generation so they can create related to our history and connect to the needs of our community, and not just architecture to give to rich people. Yes.
There is a point in there that you have in common, that both of you create their own company, office, I don't know how you call it, but there is really that aim of autonomy as a female architect that I think I'm interested in, because when you talk about extraction, and when several times we talk up also about a form of representation of the black communities in different contexts, we always saw that there was a lack of autonomy in the infrastructure. So the representation and the production of the black folks has always done for others, and they produce their own condition of extraction in a way.
Yes.
So you decide to get your own, I'm very interested in it, because I think the question of autonomy is also a central question, I do think, for the black agenda here in France, or the lack of autonomy, if you prefer. And I do think that I would like to hear you about the question of the necessity of having your own structure, you as black and as women, to be able to deal with those questions and to try to also, in an infrastructural level, be able to face to that risk of extraction and production for others.
Yes. For me, again, we have this data about how black architects in Brazil can't, they are not choose to be in these huge offices. This is a thing. So it was not easy for me to get in those offices. But yeah, of course, I was working in one of it, and I decided that I was not creating the things the way I felt that I should create. So I began my office 11 years ago, and I was doing both until I got to do just my own. So it was not easy in the beginning, a lot of work, a lot of things. But I understand that now I am in the position to create in the way I think I can create. And also people invite me to do some kind, to be in some kind of process, because they now understand my position. So I'm not invited to do other kinds of things, because I am a person that talk about the ways that I am interested in doing. So, and also it's not easy. Mm. Sometimes it's very difficult, but I think it's better now. Mm. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience of being in and out? Now,
yeah.
I do think that it's a very,
yeah,
it's an important issue.
It's quite similar in the sense that where I wasn't addressing the question I wanted to be addressed. So that was one of the starting points that I realized going on. And then at the same time, there was also the matter that I had a very large, I had a very big appointment. I was project manager of a 20,000 housing project in Benin. And it was in the, we had three sites in the country, Cotonou, Porto Novo, and Paracou. And I was not even 30, I was 27, 28. And then I was managing that 20,000 20,000 housing project, and I did, and then one of the first thing that, of course, when I started with a lot of eagerness, and I was very happy about it. And then slowly, I started understanding the undertones, the political undertones of such a project. And then I realized one of the greatest point was at some point I realized that we had so much money at our disposal to do such a great project. And we chose to do what we did, which is actually, that project has great value in the sense that at some point it was able to deliver what it was said to be delivered. Because in Benin, we barely never had such a large production of housing by the government. So it was a huge bid. So in that sense, they achieved some of the requirements, and that's fair enough. But then what about more sustainability? What about more local material? What about more adaptation to local life? What about those questions? Slowly and slowly, I started understanding who they were designing for and what paradigm they were sitting where they were designing. And then I started, it was also the same question of development, on which point you stand to start the development. You start from a Western-centric point development, you start from a development that already exists, and then that project finally was in that setting. And then I realized that that wasn't what I wanted to do. And my question of back then when I started, when I opened saying, what is West African architecture, that project was still not answering that question. So that question was still there for me. And then I often say, if I have found an office that had that vision, that wanted not me just as a dessinateur, just like producing drawing on the computer, but also as a person that could put a little bit more thinking, I would just join that office. But I haven't found such an office. So for me, it was a necessity of saying, okay, then I must open my own practice, because either I'm going to be in the other person's agenda and I'm going to be just a pion in this big scheme of his dreams, and I'm not going to be doing or at least having the opportunity to question what is that West African architecture that I want to produce in 2025 now. And then I think that question was so strong to me that I decided I was going to open my practice. So that was the starting point. Of course, it's not easy even to get commission. It is not easy even to talk about bioclimatic architecture, because there's a lot of greenwashing in architecture, as everywhere. So sometimes they will call some stuff ecocité, but everything is in cement, in concrete. Yeah, it's staggering. But I mean, it is what it is. And there's like, and they even use sometimes the word durable, because concrete stay longer. So concrete become durable. So, you know, so even in the narrative, even the narrative itself that it serves to the larger public is thwarted. So how do you fight with that? You cannot. You just go in your own lane, and then you start researching, because after designing such a project, you are just thinking, okay, if this is a production of 2025 or like 5 years ago, and this is a production that we're able to do, then what is my production, and where am I going to start? Where am I going to stand to produce something? And that's how you start digging, and then research becomes an evidence, because you're like, okay, then there must be other things, and then you just start digging, and then of course it's a boîte de Pandore. Once you get in, it never ends. And also having a practice that research is keeping you ahead of the problems, because it's like you constantly take the time to address the questions that you know are important. Because I mean, I'm also a very practical architect. I really want to help and resolve a need. So you identify, I mean, it's a city, it's urban, so it's either housing or public space. Those are the most basic and commercial space, marketplace, etc. So if you start looking, observing those three components of urban life for 5 years, and then you keep observing them, every time you have a commission or a client who comes, it means that you already have backed up your research. And as she said, it's a question of process. So every time you build your process, you build your epistemologies, and then you keep nurturing yourself. And when the client comes, I often tell them, you're not paying me the time I'm spending there. You're paying me from how many years I've been researching to be ready to have this very one line, but that resolve everything instantly instead of taking a lot of time researching. And oftentimes, of course, in this capitalist system, we don't really have time to research actively when you do the project. They just want you to design the project. So that's also those things that nobody, no office, even in Benin or in West Africa, was allowing me to do. So that was at that point that I had to decide for myself to take that as a standpoint.
Yeah, I think we'll talk a bit more about that, talking about your project and the present and future project. And I would like to ask also Gabriela perhaps to focus on a present moment, a present thing you are doing now on the last year that has really what you are in at the moment, and to try to open from that to a form of future. In two ways, in the future of that project, and also perhaps a kind of a speculation in between a future that could be based on the collaboration in between the two sides of the Atlantic. In between, I don't talk about Europe at the moment. I'm sorry, but I'm talking about the continent and Brazil. What could be an agenda? Just to talk in another way about how the modernity have been produce and modernism have been produced in the two contexts. What is now a future out of that desire of to be the good pupils of the Western world, but another agenda, and how we can cross your both experiences to imagine something. So perhaps the present and a part of the future, because I think we have got also the need of creating new speculative spaces and to allow us to get the right to dream of something. Because we are living in a dream and sometimes in a nightmare of others.
I have to say first that we are living in Brazil now a moment that I think I am very happy, because we have a lot of different kind of practices, like because we don't have just a way to produce this architecture. So I think it's very good that a lot of people are like investigating. I want to do like this. Okay, if it doesn't work, I will try again in a different form. But we don't have like anymore this idea, like modernism in Brazil, it's very questioned now. We still have this few, now there are a few group of people like struggling, we don't want this architecture, launching books again and again about the same history, about the same architects and everything, because they will not stop to do this. This is what they do, and it's okay. But we have this other group of people, which is connected also to other countries in South America, like I was in Colombia and also Uruguay, and I think it's a good moment for South America in terms of, okay, we have this huge knowledge here in our place, in our land, in our territories, so we have to look for to us, and then if we think, okay, now we can share things with other diasporas, other territories that face the same problems that we have, maybe this makes sense. But for me, it's very interesting to see how some countries in Africa, like Benin and also Ghana, etc., that like receive some Brazilian in certain point of the history, and they have this Afro-Brazilian architecture there. And I think it's very, very, very interesting, because this Afro-Brazilian architecture that they have there, so they recognize it like an Afro-Brazilian architecture, and we don't. So this is the problem that we have in this way to understand. Because for us, Brazilians, when we see, we think, okay, this is a colonial architecture in Brazil. But makes totally sense, because who built this in Brazil, who think about this in Brazil, we know it's not like the same of these other places here in Europe. But for me, it's very interesting to investigate what kind of elements does this architecture, Afro-Brazilian architecture, in Africa have to people like to say, okay, this is an Afro-Brazilian architecture. I think this is a good way to try to investigate more. You know?
Only for me, you want to say something about what you are in at the moment, and relate also to the climate reflection also on your matter and buildings, but also what could be an investigation in relation with Brazil in the other way.
Just first commenting on what she said is quite interesting because in our two historical city, Afro-Brazilian architecture is with colonial architecture is the, they are the most regarded as patrimoine, as heritage. It's almost like the thing we have to show now, almost.
It's Porto Novo.
Porto Novo and Inuida. And then, like, for example, there we have the Museum of Slavery, which is the port, which is the former Fort Portuguese. How do you say fort? Well, the fort, you know, fort. Fort, Portuguese fort, it is actually our museum right now of slavery in Benin. Yeah, and they're renovating it now anyway. And at the same time, we have all of the Afro-Brazilian architecture, which is highly regarded today as heritage, whereas all of the vernacular architecture is not regarded as such and is left in the outskirts because it didn't make the city then, so it doesn't belong to the city. And now coming back to what I'm doing now and like the next things is, I was mentioning earlier on Cotonou as that city that I grew up in and I have like all of those question about, and I think one of the most important thing for me, which I have already started, is like to kind of like keep working on that research of the city called maybe Habiter Cotonou, which will explore all of the different layers of history of Cotonou, also mimicking an exercise that a good friend of mine did for Dakar, Habiter Dakar, which makes sense because I've already started doing that in my master's and now it's just trying to have that continuity. But of course, you need funding, you need time, you need to go and do research. So that's like one of the dearest projects I would love to like move too. And then the other thing is the recent Dakar Biennale that I'd curated, which happened in Dakar. And it was so interesting because it was concerning the entire West Africa. So it would be very interesting to be able to move it to other places of West Africa and even to other places of Brazil, because we had the colonial chapter in that exhibition and we showed Saint-Louis, Porto Novo and Grand Bassam. And those three places also have colonial and also Afro-Brazilian architecture. So imagine, for example, having that exhibition happening in, for example, Brazil, with now enriching that exhibition with a leg on the definition and the question of Afro-Brazilian architecture is something that is great. And then maybe moving that exhibition somewhere else and maybe like imagine Morocco and then questioning the link with Sahelian architecture and Neo-Sudanese architecture with like north of Ghana, mosque or north of Ivory Coast mosque that exists. Those are things in the curricula and the research field that I would love to explore in the future. And right now, just practically, we are currently focusing on building for the clientele, you know, bulk climatic housing and convincing people that we can build differently. So this is our practical in building and construction. This is our practical with my associate, which is a bulk climatic engineer. And we are trying to we even have to convince people of the need to build differently, not against concrete or not traditionally as building huts, but as a mixing and like bridging of what is the contemporary needs and also the qualities of that tradition, which is now a modernity in a sense also. So this is like the places we are going to.
I like the idea also of confronting in a way a definition with a new gaze, because I think there is a lack of diasporic on African perspective on. So not only talking about the the practice of Afro-Brazilian or African folks, but also trying to build a form of way of looking at and building, as you say, some document, archive, and eventually critics. Because I do think that there is really something that is missing and that it seems that black folk are considered not able to do. This is the critical practices, without saying that it has to be a mimicry of what is the white critics. Inventing a way of being with something, Edouard Glissant says, to be with, not to extract something, not to be violent with, because using in a Caribbean context the term of critics is quite, people say, okay, we don't want critics because we're not enough fight in between us already. So the redefinition of what could be a new perspective, a new epistemology from an African descent perspective. When I look at that, what I think, and as you says, if Afro-Brazilian people look to the supposedly Afro-Brazilian architecture to Benin, it could create a new chapter, and also commission for writer, for instance, a new chapter that doesn't exist yet. And which is also, okay, an interpretation by Afro-Brazilian themselves for what you call supposedly Afro-Brazilian and what is not, and what it could be. And so I do think that at that place there is something that is very interesting in the sense of having infrastructure, as you did, having your own office is one thing, having activities relate to the people, but having also that critical dimension and archiving dimension seems to be very important to me too.
Yes, it is, because when you think about this origin of Afro-Brazilian architecture, we consider the terreiros de candomblé and also quilombos, but these places are not just a heritage, they are alive, they're still there, 200 years, like redefining themselves. And for the last, this is just an example, for the last Architecture Biennale, I was the curator with Paulo Tavares for the Brazilian Pavilion, and Leslie Loco calls to the whole proposal to a Laboratory of the Future, and we decided to share the quilombos, the terreiros de candomblé, and also quilombos, and also some indigenous architectures in Brazil, to say, okay, this has been there, but it's also connected to the future because they are there, like for ages, and they are still there. And they are there because they don't define themselves like, okay, we are just this important architecture place, like the Terreiro da Casa Branca in Salvador, were the first heritage that black people in Brazil has recognized. And this was on the 80s. It's pretty soon. Like, and they are like creating architecture, connected to nature, protecting the environment and also the community. And for me, this is a laboratory of the future. How can we learn with this kind of architecture or expression, of cultural expression?
Creating a relation, because I say, how can we learn without thinking from an extractive perspective? How can we be? Can we be with?
Yes, of course, of course, of course. Yes.
So thank you for the first part. It's not finished. There is now got a moment for a question from the audience that have been very quiet. Thank you very much. We were very supporting. It's nice. And so I don't know. We want to start with a question with remarks to Gabriela on Olufemi. And don't be shy, you are with us now since 1 hour, so I think now the warm-up is okay.
Yes.
So there is a microphone for you.
Thank you for your presentation and a few words of your works. I discover you, both of you, tonight, and it's a pleasure to know what you are trying to do. And what you are doing, not trained, but what you are doing, because but it's huge, as I heard, but I will follow. English, difficult, but
en français.
Say in French, and we can
translate.
No, I will try because I think that some people don't speak French. Maybe.
On traduira.
And okay, okay, plus simple. Désolé. Du coup, je me posais la question. Du coup, moi, je travaille sur des questions similaires pour l'amour entre guillemets de la culture déjà, parce que pour pouvoir construire une architecture qui soit béninoise ou brésilienne, afro-brésilienne, bah, il faut pouvoir déjà être conscient de sa culture et de ce qu'on aime, de ce que l'on peut faire et de nos capacités, de nos valeurs. Et donc, je voulais savoir comment, en fait, vous arrivez, entre guillemets, à surpasser dans vos recherches l'aspect très théorique qui va être de regrouper, entre guillemets, l'histoire de ce qui a déjà été construit ou déjà été fait, des choses qui ne sont pas répertoriées, qui sont soit de l'ordre de l'oral ou de la construction voilà, qui n'a pas forcément été répertoriée, pas forcément informelle, mais... puisqu'il n'a pas été répertorié, où on n'a jamais vraiment pris le temps de dessiner ces choses-là ou de les répertorier. Et comment on arrive à collecter ces informations-là et ensuite surpasser le simple cadre théorique pour pouvoir après l'intégrer dans vos pratiques au quotidien en tant qu'architecte, constructeur, ou si vous construisez, je ne sais pas. Mmh. Mais voilà, comment vous arrivez à... Mmh. Ou alors, justement, vous prenez le rôle de justement aller chercher toutes ces informations pour que d'autres puissent le faire et si oui, comment ça se manifeste dans vos quotidiens, enfin dans vos professions.
You want some translation?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I think the central question of what you ask is how, because you describe different techniques and observation of collecting those practices that haven't been archived in time, that sometimes haven't been drawn, because you are talking about doing drawings. We don't know if we need drawings to do architecture, but let's say perhaps that. So how you work to do that work, but how also afterwards you succeed in a way overseeing that theoretical dimension of that with a practice of building, or if it's made for others to build. Or what is how are you moving from collecting existing practice to concrete practice in a way? So it's interesting that because it's also related to his own practice as architect in Comore, that's reflecting about the interest in culture, the love, and I do think that you introduce the love, which is very important. And the love of the culture is one step, but afterwards there is a kind of practical dimension. So are you moved from research? Theoretical approach and practical dimension, and perhaps production if you produce or you create the condition for others to produce.
So I have been researching about this for the past 10 years or a little bit more, and also practicing, because I have 15 years of practice in Brazil. So in my master's degree, I create like a framework of this practice, Afro-Brazilian practice of architecture in Brazil, and I identified like five dimensions of it, how it works. And I also understood that we can have all the five at the same time in each project. But we can try to connect one or two, and this involves ways to connect to create with the community, materials that you're going to choose, a typology, and all of these kinds of things. So I try to bring this to my office, to my own practice, just to like resume a little bit what I'm trying to do. And also, it's not just I also do a lot of discussions, talks. I launched a book about it, and I share in these exhibitions and everything. So I'm always like trying to create different forms to communicate this to, of course, first with my own community, and then when I am in this political spaces, because I was president of the Institute of Architects of Brazil, and I am also always trying to be in some political position that is important for me and for my community. So I share, of course, and my idea is that we can, like, it's not, this framework is not to, like, to create categories or boxes that we are going to be in. It's not about this, but it's, I am trying to say, okay, we are doing this, we have, we are in this, like, in this spiral of time, and we are all part of it. We are not like spread out on the, you know, we have this this production, this way to do, and it's like legitimate. It's a way that we have to be validated by ourselves, and then we have to like to do in the ways that we have been doing, because we don't have like in a huge amount of people talking about Afro-Brazilian architecture, but we have a lot of Afro-Brazilians that research about ourselves and launched the book and did, we have this important black movement in Brazil. So we have this to investigate. My work is just bring this to architecture.
Yeah, I have to footnote something in that is very important. There is the lack of translation of what the Afro-Brazilian are doing towards French, for instance, where there is an over translation of what North Black American are doing. And so there is a kind of lack of knowledge from what is done. And I do believe that the new core of the black knowledge nowadays, including for black Europeans, have to be Brazil. And we have to refocus and re-understand what's happening for feminism, for the creativity, for the way of organization. And there is really few translation. And so as we try to do today, we have also to create some bridge. It can be also small structure, autonomous structure that can create some translation of some important texts, theoretical texts, practical texts. Because I think we don't know anything from here as a black folk in France from what's happening in Brazil. And there is a really very important production that could be very helpful to create new path and new connection. So just a footnote there is something important. Yeah. So Lufemi, you want to answer?
And then something very important that Gabriela forgot to mention is that she is a curator and she does a lot of exhibition. So exhibiting her work is also a great way to translate that knowledge. And it's something that I also started doing. And when I did that in Dakar, it was amazing to see, tall Muslim women walking with their kids and looking at Mosquée de Djenné and then like Dahomey Kingdom and then like maybe Hôtel Ivoire in Abidjan. And then really people came out of that with like a very strong sense of pride. It was like, yeah, so this is there. This is where we have been. This is our city. So already showing also is a strong way to do that. And then just coming back to that question is, for me, it was never about being a researcher. It was about being an architect. I want to build. That's very clear with me. I never wanted to be an architect, a paper architect that just researched, wrote thick book, did a PhD, and never got to test whatever he's saying. That was never my goal. My goal was to build. And then, because I didn't want to build in the way that they build today, then I started researching. And I enjoy research because it's allowing me to have this holistic view of things, because also something that is very important is that architecture is a crystallization of time, economy, culture, politics, everything in one moment, in one place of time. So that's why normally if we look at the need of the people, all of those things, architecture should always be different, normally, if we wanted to. So once you look at those things and you just, if you gain some knowledge and then you start trying to respond to the need of the client and the climate. So society and climate, society and environment, I'm telling you, you are going to get to a project that is different from the other project, and you are going to move from what you learn in theory to the practice in building. So I think that's for, and also I'm something, somebody that's very practical, so I really want to respond to a need. So once you stand from there, if you always try to respond to the need, then you always adapt to the need, and then you probably always change a little bit of incremation and incremation. Non, c'est je sais pas comment on dit, j'ai oublié le mot. Just like a little bit of iteration, yeah, the iteration of the gesture. So it's never static. Maybe it's not like a great gesture, but every time is a little bit of a change, and then. That's also why I want to complete and get to that book of Habiter Cotonou, because for me, it's very important to get there. And then also, to be honest, I want to be copied. Yes, that's my point. That's my end goal. But first, I need to make money myself out of my own design, because that's the other problems. People copy you too early, and then you don't have the ownership of your work. So, no, but literally, I really want, because the other thing is you have to teach by example. In Benin, you design, and people say, oh, he did his house so great. Oh, I want the same. That's it. And oftentimes, it's rich people who give the taste. Either rich people or government building who give the tone of how you design a city. So it's either one or the other that give like, oh, so now they did this. So this is in trend. So basically, it's finding those great commissions that are going to put you in the map. And then people are slowly going to start replicating some of your design, etc. So yeah, that's what I can comment about that.
Yeah, I could add something also, because even with your question, you didn't question what theory could be from a black perspective. Yeah, because he said the theory and the practice, and those separation as mimicking in a way a kind of Western epistemology of the theory won't be studying in a way of being in relation with. What is the theory? Which it could be also a series of experiences. And so the idea of being outside of a situation, just to phrase it that way, as a way of studying, is exactly the opposite of what Olifemi and Gabriela said. You are always inside the situation. So it's a new form of theory, because you are living what you are talking about.
Yes, it's exactly what why I put this question, because a lot of theory that we have and a lot of theory that we have now in Brazil, it's in another part of the world, it's made by people that sometimes don't are in the situation. And that's why I talk about the theory and also practical, because I think the practical will be also different than the theory. That's why I think that it's really important that make a new theory, new archive, and also to make it possible a new architecture and a new way of construction with the material, and but also with including the way of life and including I think the people, because when I go in some spaces, I'm terrifying, because everyone is running for a goal that is not real, not really his goal. And but also thank you for your work, because I think that you are in good way for me.
Thank you. I think in the way what you try to talk about is also an issue of responsibility, and responsibility and responsibility both. Just to say that indeed all the things you note, that when you are building from that perspective with those needs, if you question that aspect and so on, it creates a form of responsibility. And so the theory is not disconnect from a form of responsibility. And sometimes if we change the epistemology of archiving, for instance, or we could say also that indeed the aesthetic of the archive is also the ethic of the archive and they are the conditions of the archive. Without looking for abstract conditions or perfect conditions, you know, as sometimes in architecture, what is could be the perfect scenario? It says, no, I think the reality is the only one scenario. You have to practice it. And so the conditions create aesthetic instead of saying, I want to do that. How to find means to do that? Instead of considering that the conditions are producing the architecture. And you just have to be, let's say, open to what's happening also. And so it's coming back to the so-called popular and vernacular and so on, things that happening as a, in a chaotic way, as the city is built also not only from desire, from goals, but also from accidents, from misunderstandings, all those things that we refuse and we should be able also to accept as a, if you don't think that you are the master of the forest, but you are just somebody trying to do something as other people. So...
For me, the most important perspective that we have now in architecture is the understanding that we have this diverse, huge diverse way to produce architecture. Mm-hmm. Without creating this kind of idea that, like pre-architectures, mm-hmm. vernacular architecture, mm-hmm. also popular, informal yeah. architecture, because these ways are just always, as I said before, putting this way to do, this European way to do, white man like way to do in the top, and the other ways to do, mm-hmm. like okay, this is just one thing, you know. Like the different.
The rest of the world.
The rest of the world, yes. And this is colonialism. This is also racism. So we have to try to like unbuild this idea and start to, okay, and also in a non-extractive way, like to, okay, now I'm going to Brazil to see how the ways they are doing, so I want to do this in the... Yes, it's not about this, but just to understand that we have different ways to do and different kinds of architecture, because architecture, it's not this special thing, like magical thing, it's just another expression to culture. It's this, just this. And the materials, the shapes, the typology, everything, it's related to the culture. The territory. Mm-hmm. I think this mm-hmm. is the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there a last question in the room? Because I think we're just running over time, and I'm personally not very good as a master of time, I have to say.
We still have 10 minutes.
Still have 10 minutes.
Yeah, from when you started.
Yeah, that's cool.
Hi. Hi. I wrote my question, so I think now more than ever, with the climate changes, the world has a lot to learn from Afro-knowledges in crustaceans. And my question is a little bit outside the practice, but I will ask anyway. What is the reality of these knowledges in architecture university? In the both countries and regions, and if we don't have this knowledge yet, we will see this knowledge one day in the university. And how important is this? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm. I want to start this one. Mm-hmm. Why? Because we don't have an architecture school in Benin. So yeah, I just want to put it out there. It's a good beginning. So it tells you a lot. So just from that starting point, it tells you how can you design or build a country when you don't have its own laboratory within its geography, so it can actually ask the question of the locality to answer them. So the question is that we have engineering schools, but we don't have architecture schools. So even from that, it means that the architectural curriculum is not built. It means that it doesn't exist in university. And this is also why I research as well, once again. As I say, I didn't want to be a researcher. I wanted to be an architect, but I just had to start being one. And then it goes to the question of archiving again, because cities are gentrified, erased, changing, evolving, which is the way of the world and the way of life, which is okay. But at the same time, we have to make sure we archive to be able to have something to give to the university, because right now there's no book of architecture of Benin right now. There's a book about photographs of Porto Novo for Brazilian Afro-Brazilian architecture. There is a book about Ouidah as a city. There are things about royal palaces of Abomey, but nobody wrote on Beninese or West African. There is African modernism from Iwan Ban and Manuel Ertz, but they're not Africans, for example. So you can really understand how much of the curriculum we do not have for architecture. So you also understand why the production of architecture is so removed from us, because we don't even produce the knowledge ourselves. We don't sit there and think about it. So, yeah, there it is, not much.
From the Brazil perspective, I can say that we must have like 1,000 or more schools of architecture, and so it's a different problem. It's a different problem because we have a lot of schools of architecture. Maybe in the city of São Paulo, we must have like 30 schools of architecture in the city of São Paulo. So we have this a huge amount of schools of architecture. This means we have a lot of architects like graduating each year. But the thing is, our curricula, it's related to this European way to do architecture, and not in the like the good schools that you have now. You have a lot of good schools that I know that it's like reinventing themselves and trying to do different and everything. No, we have like this thing that it was stuck in 100 years ago. Way to understand and also to produce architecture. So we have this huge group of architects that just know how to do modernism, how to create with concrete and everything, and they can't even understand that this way that they know, this unique way that they know how to do architecture, is just to like to deliver architecture to this high class people, rich people in Brazil. And but the thing is, we don't have space for everybody, because also these few high class rich people, they want to build with a few, not just few people from these huge offices. So it's like doesn't the count doesn't close, you know. It's like we have this a lot of frustrated architects that can't work and don't know other ways to do, and they also don't have this self-esteem to understand that okay, I can do different, I can try to I don't know create other ways of doing everything. So, but we also have, in terms of archive and everything, in another hand, we have like people that were researching about also terreiros, de candomblé, quilombos and everything since the 60s. We have these books on our archives and everything, but the perspective, it was always like this. Okay, this Afro community do this kind of architecture, like from nowhere, they don't know what they are doing, and with this idea, like, it's just to, again, create a difference between the popular and the, we say in Portuguese, oh my God, I forgot the word, also in Portuguese. It's
you mean the form of vision of architecture in one sense, yes, and the other, where a form of improvisation.
Yes, because you have popular and you have this other way to do. And this kind of books were just to prove the perspective that this is low and this is high. Our way to do is high and this way to do is low. So we are now trying to, like, to, okay, but they are also this archive. They were there, they drowned these spaces that we don't have anymore. So we are now trying to read again with other perspectives and to look again to this archive and present them again in another way.
Thank you. Last question. There were still 5 minutes left for the very last question before the conclusion, because Olufemi told me we got an extend extra time, so I took it. No, so since there is no more question, we can keep on talking about that in an informal way. And we know that indeed there is a lot of things that have been opened by Gabriela and you, Olufemi, so I would like to thank you a lot about everything we share, and it's opened us also to a lot of questions that, of course, resonated in that context, indeed, where we are talking Paris. It's totally another geography, and indeed, it's echoing a lot of questions and problems that we are facing at the moment relating to. We talk also about the archive, but also we could have talked, and we will talk next week also about the ancestrality, meaning how we relate to our legacy and which way not to be also self-extractive in our own ancestrality and not also creating a new market of our ancestrality, but trying more to be involved in the kind of production of ancestrality with another conception of time, based on the present, past, future, and the same space, and not based on the archive of the past. And so I'm very happy to that first opening moment. We know that we got a lot to do, but now we know that we already did a lot. So thank you much, very much.
Atlantic Threads.